I guess that's me. Good morning. Guys, I think we might have one of those space glitches where people can't join. I actually was testing this out on another account, and yeah, seems like we are stuck. So I'm going to make an executive decision to close down the space and restart another one. So producer Eric, would you mind ending the space? And then we will kick up another one and get everybody back on stage. Then we'll do the intro and we will kick around why Fiat sucks. Just kidding. But we will talk about a bunch of different stuff. So guys, give it a second and look for the Bitcoin Veterans handle to reboot the space. Eric, with that, shut her down and bring up a new one. I'll rename it. You don't even have to name it. Just say reboot maybe and we'll go from there. All right. See you guys all in a second. Thanks. That is really a fun way to start the morning. Love the intro music the first time, but thanks everybody for joining us. Technical difficulties on a Friday, and appreciate everybody who listens in and who's so resilient and knows how to work this app and switch gears. Hopefully this one seems to be working much better. Sometimes that happens. So we'll roll with it. And yeah, hopefully get on with the show, but welcome, welcome. Welcome to Bitcoin Veteran Spaces number 268, where we talk about Bitcoin and other stuff. My name is Bob Van Kirk. I'll be your host this morning, joined once again by Texas Toast. Looks like we got a panel up here of familiar faces and friends. And thank you, producer Eric, for getting this new show space rebooted. All right. Let's take a look at the stats today. Thank God it's Friday, September 19th, 2025. We are at Bitcoin block height number 915,414 with the Bitcoin price sitting just around $116,350, which means you can still pick up 859 sats for each US dollar. And yeah, good stuff. We have a couple of announcements. Sorry, guys, just trying to get things rearranged here on my plethora of screens. In the old nest, I did have, and we'll try to get it up there, the announcement about Bitcoin Veterans having our second annual summit on November 10th and 11th in Nashville, Tennessee. Get your tickets. Sign up today at bitcoinveterans.org/summit2025. And we also have the sponsors on that page, sponsorship opportunities. So if you're interested in sponsoring, would love to have you participate in that as well. All right, maybe just some other housekeeping. Guys, we'd love to have new speakers up. Obviously no shit coining up here, but would love to have you. If you would like to come up on stage, please do hit that microphone in the bottom left, and we will get you up here. Today is kind of a free-for-all. We can talk about really any topic you want to. Use that purple pill. It'll be a purple pill in a second when someone throws a comment in there. So if you do have a comment or question because you can't talk, you're listening to us at work, or you're just trying to concentrate on something else, throw a comment down there. With that, I want to say good morning to Texas Toast first. Thanks for co-hosting, as always, sir. How's it going, and what are you excited about today?
I'm excited to get these cats out of my garage, dude. It smells like piss, and I'm over it.
Nice. Producer Eric, would you like to say good morning?
Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good, great, and wonderful as always. Thanks for the help. Neil, how's it going today, sir?
It's been doing real well. I've been thinking about athleticism as this, like, you know, the union of power and range of motion. And, like, when compared to fiat and how we move through our economic reality, it's like the thing that came to my mind is kind of like, you know, playing with buying Bitcoin, becoming a Bitcoiner is kind of like becoming like an NFL Blitz meets Madden type of a thing. Like, people in fiat world are just playing with this and these rules, control, constricted, that range of motion is very limited, and it's not very, fiat's just not a very powerful monetary object. And you flip both of those, not only the potency of the object, but also full freedom and range of motion. Like, that's just another way of kind of conceptualizing why Bitcoin changes people's lives.
Nice. Yeah, maybe we can hop into that a little bit more. And producer Eric, can you help me, or Texas Sos, can you help me with BFP? Maybe he's already up here, but I cannot add him to the stage. So maybe one of you guys can help me out with that. Pubby, good morning. Thanks for leaving that other space that I think you were in. Is this one just more interesting? What's going on today, man?
Wow, come on, man. You know my loyalties lie. It's always with the veterans. Let's go, man. Yeah, hey, I was trying to figure out. So when you have a summit, okay, that's obviously a step up from a meetup, but maybe less than a conference. But does a summit, is that because we got stuff outdoors, you got a range, you get to squeeze off a few rounds? Either way, man, I got to check my calendar. Looking forward to it. Happy Friday.
Yeah, thanks for that. And I do think you're right. But, you know, I think we've seen the progression of conferences, and they've just become big, other cryptos. And I would also characterize them as a lot of paper Bitcoin. So I think having a summit is a lot better. And yes, the range will be fun and safe, by the way. BFP, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
You're open.
Oh, you're breaking up. It's Matrix Birds Friday for BFP. We'll get him back. Keep walking that dog. Find a better place in the neighborhood where your connection is more stable. Let's see. Yeah, once again, guys, if you'd like to come up, please do hit that microphone, and would love to have you. We'll kick around some topics today, but maybe we can hop into it. So, Neil, I do think that this is an interesting idea. Do you want to kind of lay it out again? So you're talking about physical ability and range of motion, and trying to also tie that into, and guys, this was not planned, so I'm putting Neil on the spot a little bit from his, what he was thinking about this morning. I guess just kind of go into it, Neil, and maybe we can kick this topic around a little bit. Maybe it goes somewhere. Maybe we'll shift. I think it's an intriguing thought. So go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I just, like, we all can relate to, you know, sports and this idea of athleticism, and you're like, well, what are they doing on the field? Like, what makes an athlete? And, like, any athletic feat is, you know, it's motion, it's moving with power. And, you know, like, you look at the gymnast, it's not like, you know, it's not like the human body can't do the splits, and there's some superhuman, you know, ability that lets them do the splits and do all these crazy flips and things. It's like, that's every human body can do that. I mean, unless you're, like, broken or something like that. But, you know, it's training to get that range of motion and to put power, put strength, you know, through that full range. And, like, that really just kind of, like, for me, was a good way of understanding how we're moving through economic reality, too, and a way of conceptualizing why Bitcoin is so powerful. It's like, you know, the monetary object itself, like, all of its attributes, you know, it's maximally potent. Like, you can't even theoretically come up with something that would be better than, you know, it's like, at best, you would just match it in potency. So you're just like, you know, in like a sports game or something, that you play on like a video game, you know, it's just like maxing out, taking the slider all the way to the nth, you know, 99 across the board overall or whatever. Like, that's what Bitcoin's doing as a monetary object. And then it's like, But it's not just that it's a powerful object. It's also that it, since it's so, you know, oriented on the freedom, and it, you can send it anywhere and you can do anything, you can take, you know, you're not limited by the centralized, you know, powers that be. Like, you can only spend your money here. You can only spend your money there. Oh, you want to withdraw your money? Well, fill out this form, get this stamp, wait 3 days. Oh, we'll send it. Like, you can just do with it what you want when you want. And like, that's maximal range of motion. Like, you can't really think of like, I mean, maybe you could come up with some theoretically like more, a little bit more freedom, in some sense, but like, for the most part, it's, I mean, it's the most free thing we've ever like kind of conceptualized. So you, but you put those two together, and that's kind of what, you know, that idea of power and motion, together as athleticism. It's like, well, that's another way of thinking that it makes you the super athlete moving through economic reality. Like, I walk through the day different. You know, if I have a broken leg and I'm like going through the ghetto or whatever, like I'm walking through that environment in a completely different state of mind, knowing that I'm limited. Whereas if I'm, you know, all American linebacker, you know, crazy big dude walking through, like I walk through life differently, a different attitude, a different mode of being. And like, I think that's a reason why, you know, people that get into Bitcoin, they act, you know, I don't know, they act in a more dignified, like, I don't know, they're just more powerful people walking through life. So you don't have to be scared off. You don't you can face things like adversity. Like, I don't know, if something happens, life throws a wrench at me, like, I can handle it. I can take it. I have confidence moving forward that, you know, I'm not just going to be, you know, wiped out, by something. Like, and that, like, it translates to all the other domains of your life, how you relate to your kids, how you relate to your spouse, how you relate to your neighbors. Like, that, it's like a cascading effect, which I think is really, really cool and important. And I don't know, that was just kind of what I've been thinking about this morning, and I don't know, thought I'd share.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's the type of attitude that you get from having savings, and our society's really lost that. I mean, you see all the statistics. If Infra was up here, he'd be able to tell us about, you know, all the numbers. And I think it's like most people don't have $500 in savings to their name. And then you go up from that level, and even the people with any level of wealth, you know, that savings is tied up usually in their home. So we're just hamstrung and don't really have a good concept of like a liquid savings that we can flex and utilize, you know, for our life. So that, you know, Bitcoin gives you that, especially once you understand it. When you're first getting in, you know, the volatility can kind of, or maybe not these days, the volatility, but, historically the volatility in past cycles and everything else, you know, can make you uneasy until you really grasp that you're holding, a better denominator, that's not changing, and kind of the one Bitcoin is one Bitcoin mindset. It's like, okay, I can stack on top of that, and it's only going to get more and more solid ground, and I can, you know, live my life the way I want it to. And it gives you a better confidence. So I totally see where you're coming from.
Yeah. It gets me thinking a little bit about friction. And, you know, Neil, in your description, obviously we all know, Bitcoin is, takes away all of that, third party, risk and friction. You have this freedom, to spend whenever you want, wherever you want, nearly instantly. And, I do think though, like on the other side of that, there are frictions to Bitcoin adoption. And so, as we build out more services, more layers to enable people, normal people to adopt this technology, I do think that that friction in the financial system, is something that is enough, as, you know, we talk about the news and all the things we see happening, with financial institutions, governments, so on and so forth. I think if if people can get around that friction with Bitcoin, that adoption flywheel will continue to occur. And, you know, I do like looking at how Bitcoin is adopted versus the internet. And I think, you know, many people have talked about that, where, you know, early on, you know, it seemed like no one was using it, and then it exploded, right? It went parabolic, and adoption, you know, is to the extent where every company is using the internet in some form or fashion. And I think the same thing will happen with Bitcoin. Anybody else have any thoughts on this topic? Or as Neil, Texas Toast, and myself were talking, did it make you think about anything else, Pubby or BFP? Or should we move on to the next topic? You know what? Just out of respect, I'm not going to do the crickets.
No, I was going to say, reframing, Bitcoin is doing that. You said Bitcoin is going to do that. I think Bitcoin is doing that. It's just the very early days where people were like, I'd never put my credit card online. Oh, clutch my pearls.
Yeah, I think my comments are because really it's doing it for us, but there's so many more people that have yet to adopt this. And so that's kind of the exciting part, that we get to see this and chat about it, but I think it is going to take more development, right? More like we're in the, first inning of this thing still. Some people would say we're a lot further along, but maybe that's just because we're over 100,000 and a few people have abandoned their laser eyes. But I do know some people who are still doing push-ups.
This is how early we are, and this is how crazy it is, Bob. $100,000, 120, and it still doesn't move the needle. 8 years on from eight, and it's still not moving the needle. And what's interesting is, this really, really started mostly as a meme exchange. That's the first line in the white paper abstract, right? You know, just, peer to peer online payments. And that's how it started. I don't even know if Satoshi himself knew how valuable it was going to be as a store of value. And this is what you're seeing play out of the natural order of a monetary system needs to be a store of value, then a meme of exchange before a unit of account. This thing just started as a meme exchange. You got people like, fuck, I need to buy some drugs. Then they're looking back the next year saying, Jesus, I just had $1 million worth of drugs go up my nose. What the hell is this thing? What is this Bitcoin? And they go back and people now, yeah, they start getting it. Number go up. And now you're being told, well, you got to spend it. I'm like, fuck me. What? I want to spend this thing. That's the most valuable thing I got. You know, that's why you have buy and replace. And man, it's been quite a journey so far. And I'm laughing. I'm laughing because we've been here this long and nothing's changed. Nothing has changed. We're here and early. We're still taking batting practice. That's where we are, but yeah. We'll see where it goes from here.
Yeah, good stuff. And, thanks guys for kicking around that topic. I do think that's an interesting one, Neil, and maybe you could write, an added chapter to your book on that. guys, if you don't know, Neil wrote a pretty good book. I would recommend, check it out. You can message him to get it. It's also on Amazon, I think, still. So, let's look at what else is going on, guys. We've kind of avoided a lot of the news topics, and maybe we'll still continue to do that today. But I did notice that we announced during the show yesterday that a difficulty adjustment was coming. I think we were on the opener. We're about 6 blocks away. I didn't see how fast the blocks were were coming during the show yesterday. But we did have the difficulty adjustment after Bitcoin miners have sustained that historic 1 zettahash amount or milestone, I'll say. And so miner difficulty jumped 4.1% yesterday. And if you guys have been paying attention or if you've been around long enough, you do see that hash rate usually precedes the price going up as well. And so wondering if anybody has thoughts on that. Do you guys mine Are you thinking about mining? Do you solo mine? Anything like that? Anything come to mind with the mining going over, being sustained at one zeta hash?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it really just shows a, an arms race of sorts that's going on. People are plugging in miners in places you probably wouldn't think of. I just saw Samson Mao, a picture of him next to the third largest hydro plant in the world in Paraguay. And it's just incredible, seeing these energy resources being used, to mine Bitcoin. And it's like, you gotta think that a nation state, arms race or hash race is kind of going on in the background. And that's what it kind of looks like to me. I don't know about you guys.
Okay. I'll bite. Good morning, guys. I'm just waiting for my coffee to still brew.
Still brew.
Good morning.
Bob.
We gotta figure out your audio situation so that it doesn't echo feedback every time you have your mic open at the same time as somebody else. I've noticed that. We gotta figure that out. Maybe get you in headphones or something. You got headphones over there? Over there?
I do have headphones.
Weird. All right. Well, hash rate is a funny, funny thing. And I think it's a widely misunderstood thing, because it's just this metric that, it seems to a lot of people like it's a direct thing that's being read off the network. Like, we just hit a zeta hash, and it's like, it's a sort of estimated thing. So it's constantly changing based on the actual verifiable, inputs to that estimation. What's really interesting is that over time, you see these trends, and that hash rate chart is just stunning. It's like the most bullish chart you've ever seen. If you just pull up the network hash rate chart and you look over any long period of time, you see this absolute parabola. And so, yeah, that's representing this fierce competition. I'd say it's one of the fiercest competitions, is the Bitcoin mining thing that's happening on planet Earth. The more people that compete to win blocks, the faster those blocks occur. And the faster that the blocks occur over time forces Bitcoin's difficulty adjustment to go higher. The higher difficulty means that it's harder to find a block. So you need more hash power, and you get this incredible feedback loop of the demand on those participants, on the Bitcoin miners, to increase their competitive edge, because what's happening is the entire competition's just getting harder and harder. That's another way to look at that hash rate chart. It's just that much harder to find a block. So if you're running a little BitAxe at home, I am really terribly sorry to inform you that it's just going to get even tougher and tougher to hit a block. If you've got your little lottery ticket, your odds of hitting the lottery are actually going down significantly over time, because the total sum of the entire mining network is piling on more and more hash rate. And those are all the other folks that you're competing with to try to hit a block. So it's a really incredible thing when you see this. In the moment, there's, a lot of variance in that reading if you really zoom in. And that's because it's based on the pace of blocks, and the pace of blocks is random. Although what I said before is true, over time, as there's more hash rate, as there's more people competing, those blocks will be found faster and faster by the whole group. But that's why, you want to look at hash rate on some kind of average reading over time. And when you see a difficulty adjustment, which is roughly every 2 weeks, that's a really good sort of sample size to look at. Well, we just had like a 4.5% difficulty increase last difficulty adjustment over 2 weeks ago. And then just yesterday, another difficulty adjustment north of 4%. And that's where you can really see the trend that there is appreciable additional hash rate coming online. From what I hear and what I know, a lot of people are bringing on the new generation equipment. You know, it was a year or two ago, some of these new S21s and the M60s from WhatsMiner and like just these new generation machines with really amazing efficiency and hash rate on them. And it's not instantaneous that these hardware are acquired and then actually put into facilities and energized and actually operating. So it takes some time. And I just really think what you're seeing here is just a steady coming online of this new generation equipment, as well as new participants joining the competition. So it's really fascinating when you dig into it, you know, build a little perspective about it, pay attention to it over time, and you'll see some of the most bullish side of Bitcoin, which is folks that aren't talking about paper Bitcoin and price targets. They're talking about like, how can we get more hash rate? How can we convert new energy sources? And they're building out business plans and committing capital. I mean, it's the most bullish group of participants in the entire scene.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And TC, I did have a question. As I was looking at time chain calendar, it says that the average block time is 9:25. So we're 11 blocks fast. Obviously, this is the network is trying to target 10 minutes. And so what do you make of that? Obviously, we've seen increase in hash rate and the adjustment occur over these next, maybe just for the audience, over these next, looks like 1,865 blocks, next 2 weeks, like you said, what do you expect? Does that number climb up towards 10 because of this difficulty adjustment, or is it also dependent upon the amount of hash power that comes on online during this time as well?
Wow, great question. Statistical averages are a funny thing. And again, you know, this is really good material for thinking about what Satoshi was thinking about when he made these different choices. 2016 blocks is the difficulty cycle. That's roughly 2 weeks. It's exactly 2 weeks if we have exactly 10-minute blocks. And that's the sample size that the difficulty adjustment accounts for. It's really interesting. It's like there's no adjustment happening at all. There's nothing regulating the pace of blocks. And it's only after this roughly 2 weeks of blocks that the protocol looks back at that 2 weeks and says, was this faster or slower than 10 minutes? When the adjustment changes in response to the previous 2 weeks, you would kind of expect if the hash rate remains the same, if the competition remains roughly at the same level and the difficulty goes up, you would expect the pace of blocks to slow down. This is really where I think you can get an easy perspective. When you see repetitive difficulty adjustments in the same direction, that's trend. We saw two difficulty adjustments ago, difficulty get cranked up 4.5%. And I would say easily if you had the same level of hash rate for the 2 weeks that followed that you had before, you would see slower blocks. You would see something closer to 10 minutes because it was that much faster than 10 minutes that caused that big difficulty increase. Well, then yesterday we see another big difficulty increase. So it's showing you right there, hash rate is not standing still. This level of competition is not remaining the same over that last month. It's steadily increasing. And that's again what you would watch if you see this last difficulty adjustment yesterday. It went up over 4%. That's what happens in my mind. I'm like, okay, let's see. Does it even out this next week or two? Do we see an average block time more like 10 minutes or even north of 10 minutes? Because that's what you would expect with this kind of dynamic. Okay, it was too fast. We're going to make it tougher. So maybe it would, the pendulum would swing back the other way. And when you see the blocks continue to come in faster than 10 minutes, even after multiple increases, you know something's going on here where the amount of competitive hash rate is increasing. It has to be, because look at the pace of blocks. So, you know, this is again where I say sorry to the folks running a little bit axe with a lottery miner, because it's like, you know, somebody with that same amount of hash rate, your little, you know, desktop miner didn't get more hash rate in the last month. It's got the same that it had a month ago. And meanwhile, the entire competition has cranked up the difficulty and has, because of trend, you can clearly see there's more competition. So it's really a fascinating perspective that you can easily develop if you just pay attention to that average block time. And that average block time will tend to kind of vary over the course of the 2 weeks. That's the red circle on Time Chain Calendar. But as it approaches completing that 2 week period, that's when it really matters, because that average block time directly translates into the next difficulty adjustment. So it's a really cool thing to just kind of pay attention, watch over time. And as we, certainly as we come into the second half of a difficulty cycle, the second week, and then as we get to within a few days, you kind of just check it out with a little bit more intent, because you realize, okay, we're getting close to where that adjustment's going to occur, and that average time is going to directly translate into that next change in difficulty.
Yeah, it's a great perspective, and I think we don't talk about this enough. So for some people, maybe they're like, oh, I just want to talk about the price, but this is the backbone of the Bitcoin network, and it's fun to look at, especially when you have great tools like Time Chain Calendar. Want to go to BFP. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, this is for TC. The Zettahash is the newest thing. I was curious, how long do you think it's going to take to get to the next one, which would be, you know, 1,000 Zettahash, which just seems so far away. It's disturbing. And what is it even called? Or do you know? I'm just curious about
I don't have that. Step. I don't have that instant recall. I know where to look to go look that up, but I'll get back to you on that.
We need you to put that into Time Chain Calendar, though, for sure. No, I'm just kidding. It is cool though.
I was gonna say no. I no idea when we 1,000-fold the level of competition for blocks. But I would just look back at where we increased by the last 1,000-fold. And that is, you know, maybe I would think that it'd be something similar to that. It's probably several years. But you never know. I mean, like, these are the kinds of things where, I feel like there's a whole new class of participants now than there were 5 or 6 years ago. You've got like legit nation states poking around and trying to get into this. I think I just saw Laos or something just the other day announced they were going to be using hydroelectric from their dams to mine Bitcoin. There's a really big level, participation happening, and it's because of the synergy with energy production and energy grids and, kind of like all of the amazing benefits that come from Bitcoin mining and the ways in which it can be used to enhance electrical systems. So we're going to see more and more of this as you see the competition evolve over the next, you know, several years and decades. Like, it's going to go from warehouse miners to, you know, energy companies and nation states and just bigger and bigger participants with more and more resources. So.
Very specifically with, like, you know, I think we're all hearing some of the same things in regards to nuclear and how You know, everybody needs energy right now. And to spin up a nuclear plant is pretty expensive. I'd say it's probably less expensive relatively than it has been in the past. If you're using an actual hard money standard, but, you know, a lot of countries that couldn't necessarily justify the expense of that before. Now that Bitcoin mining is online and can be utilized to get an ROI off of that initial baseload and provide an initial baseload, I think we're going to see a lot more nuclear proliferation in the next decade. And Bitcoin mining is going to take a huge interest in that. So that's where I see a ton of the hash rate coming from, is attached to these nuclear sites across the world. So I think that's going to play a big part.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And I do think, you know, they've announced over and over again, but that the government of Bhutan as well is engaged in Bitcoin mining directly. And that just gets me thinking that, you know, there's, as you said, TC, there's more and more coming online, different types of players. But you could see where, if you're the U.S. government, you might have proxies. You could print money, push it to miners, and have them mine for you. I don't know. It's kind of an interesting idea, but I see Neil's hand. Go ahead, Neil.
Yeah, I had a question for TC. Just shows kind of I lack a lot of technical depth, but with the mining, is it like the same exact? If two people found a block like almost simultaneously, like that doesn't matter. Like it's when someone finds a block, it doesn't like reset the problem where it's a new problem that everybody's solving. It's just coming up with the right output, and those just stack up. Is that correct? Or I don't really know exactly how that works with when they mine the block and how that works.
Well, first of all, I heard you say solve a problem. Did you mean solving complex mathematical problems? Because that's what you hear in the mainstream news about Bitcoin mining, and it's just not true.
Yes, it's coming up with the output, right?
Well, it's much more akin to like throwing a dart at a dartboard, and it's like, did you hit the bullseye or not? And now you're standing there throwing trillions of darts a second at the dartboard, and now you're blindfolded and throwing trillions of darts in the general direction of the wall, and the dartboard's moving around. And now you and a million other buddies are all blindfolded and all throwing trillions of darts at the same time, and the dartboard's moving around. And this moment that somebody hits the bullseye, the moment that somebody quote-unquote mines the block, everybody else will find out about it because that gets broadcast to the network and circulated around. And the very moment that miners find out somebody else hit the block that they were trying to hit, they immediately start working on hitting the next block. And that's how this chain works. If you're still mining on the block that Bob hit, you know, Bob hits block number 17, and you were mining for block 17, and now the word is circulating around the networks, Bob found block 17. Everyone starts looking for block 18. And if you're still looking for block 17, you're wasting energy because now everyone's working on a longer chain. That's basically how it works. And when, you know, two people find a block incredibly close together, that is the difference maker, is that gets broadcast to the network, and it's whoever's block everyone's building on top of is the block that everyone acknowledges was mined. And so, yeah, it happens all the time that people find the same block.
Because there's another one, because if you also have, you could have found the correct block, and then there's a chain, and then there's a split in the chain, and then that split gets resolved. And so technically two people could have solved a block, different blocks, right?
Right. That's basically what I'm trying to describe. You said it a little better. It's basically that, you know, what everybody builds on top of. So Bob finds block 17, Texas Toast finds block 18, you know, BFP finds block 19. And it's like each time somebody finds a block, the entire group becomes aware of it and starts working on the next block. When you hear these things about attacks on Bitcoin, 51% attacks and things like that, those kind of scenarios are where somebody is a, you know, a bad actor who wants to wrest control of the chain, and they actually keep working on the block that Bob just hit with an effort to try to actually build their own block 17, 18, and 19, and 20. And now the whole network hears about block 20 and they start building on that. But there's a different block 17, 18, and 19 behind it. That's the basic gist of the kind of 51% attack, is that you kind of rewrite the blocks and you use your oversized, competitive edge with all that hash rate to redo the work that somebody else did and change it with different transactions in the block and build on top of that. And so it's a really, wait, it gets a lot more technical,
that,
but
until you said that, I didn't realize that that was still a probabilistic outcome, that even though they have all that work that they're doing, that that's still a probabilistic result, and they could have done all that work and the last second they miss it and all that work is gone.
Well, that's why it doesn't happen very frequently, if hardly at all, is because it's a massive risk. It's whoever is expending that extraordinary amount of energy and resources to kind of like redo and undermine somebody else's work and try to control what ends up in the chain. It's just not a very good risk reward, scenario. And so you have to be talking about somebody who actually has way more hash rate than 51% to effectively not only achieve that rewrite, but to maintain it and continue doing it. And it's just one of these things where
they still have to get lucky. And they still have to get lucky. That's the crazy part.
Well, that's the thing. The closer you get to 100% of the hash rate, you don't have to get as lucky. That's the point. That's why if you have 80% or 90% of the hash rate, you hardly have to get lucky. You're going to be winning most of the blocks. So that's why it matters when you see who's got all the hash rate, who has maybe a little bit too much hash rate, you know?
Thanks for that explanation. That answered my question perfectly, and it was really easy to understand. Appreciate it.
Yeah, this is a great topic. And I do think, you know, it's interesting to see too, that there's, you can even calculate or estimate, I guess, the probability of the next adjustment. So do you want to talk about what went into that, TC, of how you're calculating that on time chain calendar? Looks like already in this block, or I'm sorry, in this difficulty adjustment period, we're seeing that looks like right now almost 2% increase at the next one. I know you said to take a look at that a little bit more closely as we get down in those 2016 in this period. We're right at the start almost for that. But yeah, I'm just curious. Like it's interesting because you're taking all of the inputs, which is the hash rate that's online and coming online or going offline, I guess, and where the difficulty sits. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
It's actually really simple. It's about the amount of work that's done or the pace of blocks within a given time frame and the known difficulty level. That number on the interface that shows difficulty, that's the same difficulty that everybody's dealing with. That's established by the difficulty adjustment, and every single block is basically dealing with that same difficulty for the 2016 blocks until the next adjustment. So everybody knows what the current difficulty level is, and then it's the pace of blocks within that that then results in the next adjustment. As far as how much the adjustment is going to be and which direction the adjustment is going to be, that's based on the average block time that you come up with. And basically, it's just as simple as looking at, okay, we know which block was the beginning of this difficulty adjustment. We know how many blocks have happened since then, and we know the timestamps of those two ends of that sample, and you can figure out the average block time. And it's really cool because it just directly relates to those adjustments, and you can really see it. I posted yesterday that, I kind of gray out that average block time in the very beginning of the new difficulty period because it's a lot more volatile. It's because you're dealing with a very small sample size. And so it's not actually as meaningful at the beginning of the period as it is at the end. So, I don't know if that helped.
Yeah, that's great. Anything else on this line of thinking? It's been great to talk about. I think a lot of people in the space don't get exposed to this, and we don't talk a lot about technical stuff on this show all the time, but it is fun to, kind of go down these paths and hopefully expose you to things that you don't think about all the time. Maybe one last thing. I don't know if you've given any thought, TC, to this, but also noticing that the average block time since the Genesis is 9 minutes and 36 seconds, which is still quite a bit faster than the target, right? And so I'm just curious, like, as we continue to see hash rate come online, what if anything, like, what are the implications of this fact? And do you think we ever really see a 10-minute target? Does that happen once the hash rate kind of levels out in some future?
That is something that really blows me away. I actually am amazed at the 9 minute, 35 second, 36 second, whatever it is, total average block time of the entire chain. And it's because, you know, all of these mechanisms are like suggestive in a way. There's nothing in Bitcoin that governs 10 minutes. Nothing actually tells blocks that they have to be 10 minutes. What there is a constant equal to 10 minutes in the calculation about difficulty adjustment. But the difficulty adjustment, even, it's kind of like the bumpers on a kid's bowling alley. You know, it's just there on the edges to sort of like encourage, maybe even that's a bad metaphor. Because really what it's doing is it's just, it's like the, what is it like? It's like the current that you're swimming against. And when the current increases, you got to swim harder to make the same amount of movement forward. And that's kind of what it's like. But when you zoom in and you look block to block, there is nothing governing the timing of blocks. It's totally deterministic. A block can happen just literally microseconds after the previous one, or it could take hours. And that's really the kind of mind-blowing aspect of it when you realize that over almost 17 years, it's averaging 9 minutes and 36 seconds. That's kind of astounding. This system is remarkably effective at what it sets out to do. And we casually say, oh, 10-minute blocks, 10-minute blocks all the time, when there's really nothing enforcing 10-minute blocks. What there is just this change in the current that all the Bitcoin miners are swimming against. And when you have new participants joining the competition, the total force of that competition grows extremely. And as there's more hash rate, you end up with statistically faster blocks on average. And so it doesn't surprise me that over time, over 17 years almost, with this parabolic increase in hash rate, yeah, you're going to see faster than 10-minute average. It's just amazing to me that it actually keeps it as close as it does. What would cause it to come closer to 10 minutes is you'd have to have really long extended periods of time when you have slower blocks. So the difficulty gets so high, for whatever reason, hash rate stops increasing. Hash rate even comes offline. What's that?
Could that be one of the poison blocks?
There's so many different reasons. I mean, I look back on recent history. In 2021, China banned Bitcoin mining for who knows how many times they had done it before, but it was like really a real ban this time, and everybody freaked out, and a ton of hash rate came offline. That was the really important thing. You had a dominant percentage of the hash rate in China, and legitimately they got shut off, whether it was because of flooding and weather, or whether it was because of a strong-arm government forcing people to do things.
Because Uri, we could see Uri on the blockchain too, for sure. Like that storm was there.
Okay, but you know, keep in mind too, over a longer period of time, a temporary drop doesn't really affect it that much. You have to imagine an extended drop in hash rate. Something has to happen where
something like Uri, where like the state of Texas was down for a week.
I mean, I think even bigger than that. I think of like global kind of significant events where, you know, major portions of the participants go offline for like years. Then you would definitely see that average drift closer to 10 minutes and then north of 10 minutes. And it's that kind of thing that you'd need to see. And I got to tell you, this is maybe one of the valuable perspectives of looking at these things as a pleb. You pay attention to this chain unfolding in front of you. It is the literal heartbeat of Bitcoin. Every single time a new block hits, that is the continuation of this process. That is literal TikTok next block happening, and you can see it. And to me, it's a very comforting and confirming kind of perspective to just continue to see that. And you watch that average block time and you see it just continue to be faster than 10 minutes. You know, this network is healthy, that competition is stout, and it's really, I think, a useful thing to put in front of your face from time to time to just actually see the network thriving.
Well, yeah, and specifically, I mean, exactly what you're talking about, like, I think about the China ban all the time and kind of what happened, and, you know, you saw this one-time drop in hash rate, and 2 weeks later, It was right back to, you know, it adjusted, the network adjusted, and then we're right back to where we were before. And then we had
like 15 minute blocks. It was like a period where it was like 15 minute average blocks. And then you saw this massive drop in difficulty. I will never forget it, 'cause that's when I started mining. I literally had like the FOMO into mining. I was like, oh my God, look how much the difficulty has dropped. It is so easy to find a block now. And I aped into mining as a total noob and totally naive about it. But that's how this set of incentives works.
Right.
If you imagine any scenario where the difficulty drops enough, that incentivizes other people to start jumping in and taking advantage of that drop in difficulty.
Right. And so specifically for the total average block time to increase, it would require, you know, over multiple 2 week periods for the hash rate to continue to drop. So, and in my mind, especially in this stage, like the incentives, and especially with technological innovation, you know, with faster and faster, ASICs, you know, computing, getting a higher and higher hash rate just because of technology, increase. But so that's what you would have to see over the course of a long time. Every 2 week period, it would have to go less and then less and then less and then less hash rate online, in order to, you know, facilitate that increase in block time over the whole span of Bitcoin's life. So I don't really see that happening. Maybe, if we hit like a technological stunt for years, maybe that can happen, or, you know, there's other scenarios, but I don't really see that happening.
On Monday's space, we're going to talk about zero point energy. No, I'm just kidding. But TC, I do think that, this is, it is a great topic, especially on a Friday. It feels like it's been a long week and a half with what's been going on. So do appreciate you letting us pepper you with questions and coming up again and talking about this stuff. We kind of touched on it. I don't remember when, a couple weeks ago maybe, but you with this, well, let's not go there. Because I think it's going to extend the show way too long, and it's not that,
Yeah, I got to drop in a minute anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So it's Friday. We'll let everybody, get on with their day and maybe, enjoy the, if you're still into, listening to Spaces here on this Friday, you can, join the Bitcoin Today guys at 11:30 Eastern. So you'll have a little bit of a break here, but, I do think we're going to wrap this one up early unless, anybody on stage had any, Final closing thoughts. I can give TC opportunity, Neil, BitPetro, BFP, Texas Toast. Anybody have final thoughts on this one? All right, I'll take it as a no. Oh, hey.
I will say ahead. One thing. We had a fantastic meetup this last meetup. So if you're ever in the DFW area, please come out. You know, we're getting about almost 20 people there. And unbelievably, we had two ladies there. So big shout out to Bitcoin Mom who made it out. And yeah, guys, it's a really good community. Make sure you make it out to the In Real Life events. Make it out to the Bitcoin Veterans Summit for sure. And, you know, have a great weekend.
Yeah, if I can ever afford a helicopter, I'll be at that one every time. It's just it takes like an hour and 45 minutes sometimes for me to get to that one. So I'm like a once a year guy on that one when I want to deal with traffic. But that is it is a fun meetup, and I like that it's all at different places. But guys, get out to a meetup, whether it's DFW or otherwise. If you can find some people in your local area, then you guys can argue with people in real life about some of this stuff and maybe some of the things you hear on Spaces or these podcasts and otherwise. But we're going to wrap it up. Do you want to thank everybody for being with us each weekday, 10 a.m. Eastern. We'll do it again Monday. Hope everybody has a great weekend. And remember, do not shitcoin. I don't know what to tell you if you're still buying this garbage. It's going to be sad times for you.
People that use fiat currency as a store of value, we call them core. We call them core.